I think today's guest is a legend. I think you would all agree. Tim O'Brien has a brand new album, the Tim O'Brien Band. We're going to talk to Tim in the second hour at length about the album, where he's going with it. Tim is always full of great information. He's been a guest on the program several times. I think you're going to enjoy it. Talk about the new album and everything Tim wants to talk about. There's so much information from this man. I am always really happy to welcome back to Unreal Bluegrass Tim O'Brien. How are you, Tim?
I'm doing great, Steve. How are you today?
I'm doing good. Listen, I appreciate your time. I know you're always busy. I know you're about ready to take off on another leg of the world tour, so to speak. So you're making this time for me, which I greatly appreciate. And the reason that I reached out to you, I almost said retched out. Although I'm Northern Kentucky, it doesn't take far. Only 30 minutes south, I might as well be in Alabama.
When you're up the creek, you can retch out.
Right. The new album is Tim O'Brien's Bluegrass Band, and I wanted to chat with you about that and anything else that comes up. But fine album on
Howdy Skies Records. Yeah, that's my label. I started in probably 1999, I think.
Yeah, and you've actually taken the effort to call this the Tim O'Brien Bluegrass Band. It's not a huge effort, but it's like you want to use that title now. Before I go any further, let's get all the band members that are normal members of the band on the album. You have a lot of guests on the album, but
We only have one guest, but his name is Brian Sutton, and he's awful good. He plays guitar on a couple tracks, but it's the band, and as it stands, and we've been touring, is with Mike Bubb on the bass, the old standby.
Everybody knows Mike.
And Shad Cobb on the fiddle, and what a wonderful voice he is. And Patrick Sauber on the five-string banjo, and he plays some guitar on the record, too, and we're trying to work that out in the live shows, too. But I'm playing the guitar, and my partner in life and now in music as well, Jan Fabricius, is on the vocals. She plays a little bit mandolin on two or three songs, too, so it's kind of veers between four instruments and five, and there's a lot of duet harmonies, a couple trios.
There are, and when I said a lot of guests, I misspoke. You're correct. There are a lot of people that the audience would know who contributed songs or songwriting efforts to tunes. I mean, Sean Camp and Dan Auerbach, who just does so many great things. I immediately connect him with the Black Keys. I know he's done things on his own. He most recently was involved in producing and writing songs for the Gibson Brothers. So, I mean, he's kind of everywhere.
Yeah, he's a real Renaissance man. And since he moved to town, he built a nice studio. And I guess he, I know he's just kind of dug in Nashville. He still gigs with the Black Keys, I think, some. And I don't know if they've made a new record in recent years, but he's made his own solo record. And he's just producing a lot of people at that studio. Yeah. So, he's producing John Anderson. He's producing CeeLo Green. He's doing a lot of different diverse things. You know, he did some Afropop stuff there.
Yeah, tell him that.
It's really cool to go and just kind of hang out. He's got like a little factory, you know. He's writing songs and then recording them. And then he's got his own label you can put the stuff out on. I did some mixing in there, too, for a record that I made with my sister and our families. And got to know him and wrote some songs. And he actually himself, I don't know what he's going to do with it. But he was real happy that we recorded our song that, you know, we'd written together. He said, nobody's ever recorded anything but me that I wrote.
Oh.
So, I don't know if that's really true, but co-writing is great. Sean and Dan, and there's other, there's one with Jan called The Other Woman.
That's right.
And there's some songs of mine, I guess. And
there's some couple traditional things. The Other Woman, by the way, that you mentioned that. I look at that as kind of like the response to let's just pull an easy one out of the air. Jolene, Don't Take My Man. Well, this is the other woman saying, wait a minute, I actually have a role to play here, and I'm still the person, and it's you and Jan, and it takes the point of view of it's not Jolene, because it's not that harsh of an environment that the song is put in, but it's kind of like, hold on, wait a minute, let's just look at the other angle here. Don't call me the other one. I do a lot of stuff, and I provide, and maybe this happened, and maybe it didn't happen, but I don't know that I've heard a song quite in that tone before.
Well, it's in a way, it's the sort of most direct, sort of intense song on the record. And it was controversial whether we'd use it. And then we went, well, you know, I really think we should stick by our guns and put that thing out there. And definitely made for a Janda thing. But, you know, life is quirky. Society is, you know, you come up against walls sometimes. And you know.
Well, here's what I think.
There's a lot of stuff to talk about.
There's a lot of stuff to talk about in that song, but I think it also kind of, every once in a while, we need to reach back and remember that not everything is a black and white situation, yeah. That things blend back and forth, and you know, who knows, but I thought that gave a nice, Aaron, and you're right, it gave a nice opportunity for Jan to really get into it, and
we know, that's the first song that she's ever written, I think, and this is the first, well, she's recorded with me since we've been going together, we started dating maybe, I guess it's 7 years ago, and living together for the last six. She's, you know, I'd learn songs, new songs, I'd write new songs. She'd start singing harmony to them, and then it'd be time to record, and I go, gee, Jan, you already know the harmony part, and you sound really good. Let's just go have you sing it. And that led to us, you know, we were traveling together when we could, and then it became, oh, well, just travel with me all the time, and we'll get up there and sing.
She, on the second tune, Drunkard's Walk, that's her joining in, right? She's not singing lead, but she's behind you.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's 13 songs. I count clearly one instrumental, but I also kind of count La Gringa Renee as an instrumental, but for the opening little vocal thing, treatments and that. Here's a question that I have for you, and I've had for many people, and you do so much Irish music or whatnot, or influenced on Hop Down Reel, Johnny Darity's Reel. So many of those type of instrumental fiddle tunes that are Irish, when that's on the album, it's the number fourth cut. There's always a medley in it, and like with about 1:15 to go, it clearly clicks over smoothly in the Johnny. I'm going to say Darity's Reel.
Yeah, Johnny Darity's.
Yeah, Darity. So. Why are they almost always too short, or just it makes a nice transition?
Well, you know, in the Irish and Scottish Celtic world, they play kind of like the old time musicians here play, where they play, everybody plays melody at once. There's accompaniment, you know, chordal accompaniment and stuff, but the main thrust is getting everybody to play the exact same sort of version of a tune and get sort of one big sound. Well, so you do that. And on a recording, I think it started with Michael Don of a commercial recording. He wanted to put more music out. He only had 3 minutes, so he would play each tune twice and maybe get three in that way. But I think it's also, you're not playing for a dance. That unison thing, you don't have the sort of solos like jazz. Sort of oriented solos like you have in bluegrass.
And Tim, you're right. And most people think a bluegrass band, who's going to take a break next? Well, in the Irish, in the traditional music you're describing, it's sort of like one big band sound, and you just kind of...
Yeah, it's like one unison ensemble of the melody.
Right.
And so, you know, it's kind of... I thought, well, we make it sort of like a fiddle and banjo thing, but it'll be two fiddles, and we're playing unison. And then we kind of, when the... It shifts to the second tune. There's actually a banjo and a guitar break, and then we do like harmony fiddle, and I play a tenor part on the fiddle. And it's kind of like it shows where, in a way, in 3 minutes or something, it shows kind of where bluegrass instrumentals came from, Celtic music. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean...
It kind of evolves from one to the other.
Right, right.
But, you know, putting a banjo behind any kind of Irish tune, it kind of makes it sound like bluegrass right away, fostering sort of the rolling banjo in there.
I don't know why I thought to ask you that. I've always wondered why that was done in that fashion, and I figured I'll ask Tim. He'll know the answer, or at least have a good response.
I think that's the real thing. I think maybe like Michael Coleman and his ilk in New York and Chicago in the 20s when the... 30s when they were recording some of that stuff for the first time, they wanted to put more music in, and so they figured, well, we'll just do a medley, and that way we can. That might have made them play faster too. I don't know. They play pretty fast on some of those old records.
The you mentioned Brian Sutton as joining you. Now, I know you've known Brian forever and ever and ever, but you've probably certainly with Hot Rise over the years, he's been a regular. Here's my question about there's two tunes that Brian plays on. I'm going to ask you about those, but you know Brian, and you've probably played with him before, but when he's joined Hot Rise, which has now been a good long time, is there more familiarity? I mean, is Sean Camp, I know you've probably, Sean, Brian, everybody would know. Sean, everybody ought to know on their own, but as with the Earls of Leicester, maybe they would be more familiar with Sean if they have a second thought about it. And I just wonder if the familiarity of being with someone traveling and performing is you co-write and you have, of course, I would always ask Brian to play on my song if I had one, but you know what I'm saying? Just admit, do you know these people better now or just more familiar with their, what they can do?
Yeah. I mean, this record kind of in a lot of ways is about getting comfortable with where I'm at and just kind of letting it, you know, turning the switch and letting it go. It's like with Brian, I said, you know, he is a known quantity and a very brilliant and responsive collaborator. And Sean, great songwriter, and you know, we wrote once and we didn't really finish what we wrote, and finally got together and wrote this song called Beyond.
Beyond,
and it's like it's kinda like you know, you trust one another and you kinda know what the other guy's about. You know, it actually those collaborating kind of helps you know other people better too, because you have to get to know each other. You kind of got to get on the same page.
And I would think it would be easier, although you're very accomplished and we'll say professional at songwriting. Still, if you actually know the person from performances or just, you know, being around them often, it ought to be easier to say where you're going to start and where the song's going to go. And Beyond is a great song, by the way. It's beyond, but it's also sort of like down the road. And you always have songs about traveling. Even the last tune, Crooked Road, you know, you're a road warrior, man. That's just it. So you're always riding, getting back on the crooked road, and it's part of family life, is that you are.
Yeah, you know, it's just, but like, recording a song by Dirk Powell and by Norman Blake, those are kind of like old friends and heroes. The combination of that, so somebody you really respect them, you still, somebody, you know, I think there's some sort of knowing the person. Hal Cannon wrote a song called Wind, and I just heard that and said, man, I love that song, I love that lyric, and it took me a while to figure out how to play it, but it means something that I know the people, and I've known them for a long time, and when I sing that song, I kind of think of Hal's world and what he's done with his life, which is remarkable. He's a folklorist and songwriter, musician.
Well, and, I had a note to specifically ask you, and I should know Hal Cannon, but all the other names that I recognize are the Wrights and the Dirk Powell and the Woody Guthries and Norman Blake, certainly. I couldn't place Hal Cannon, and so I was going to ask you. Now you've given me a little bit of information on
Well, the first way I knew of Hal Cannon was through the Deseret String Band, and that's the band based in Salt Lake City. I think they might have recorded for maybe Rounder or Philo or one of those labels. They had three or four records in the mid-70s and that I know of. And I'd see him at some festivals and stuff that Hot Rise played. And then if you've ever heard the phrase cowboy poetry, it's probably through Hal, because he, the guy who spearheaded the very first gathering, they call it the annual National Cowboy Poetry Gathering in Elko, Nevada. It's just celebrated 35 years. And Hal's retired from that part of the game, but it's enabled him to continue as a creative musician, performing on his own. And so he's back at that and living in the Rimrock Country in the southwest part of Utah. And
good.
That song kind of spells out where he lives. It's the feel you get down there. It's just rock, and maybe in the distance there's a little trickle of a stream going by.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of wind.
That's a great song. I'm glad you brought it up, because it skips me from. I don't have to go down there and pick up that note now. Speaking of cowboys, Donegal, which I did not expect the lyrics to go the way. I'm sure I know the song, But I would think that Donnie Gowich is the third cut on the you're singing about cowboys, but I some reason I, that strikes me, and again, I'm wrong on many things, and tradition, it's a traditional song. I think of it as being, well, it has to be based in Irish music, but the lyrics don't seem to be.
No, you know, it's funny. I think maybe it sounds like the county in northern part of Ireland, called Donegal.
Yeah.
But it's not that. And it's, I think Donegal is sort of, I think what I've read about the phrase or the word Doni, it might come from a Spanish pretty girl, or Doña, maybe Mrs. Girl, or I don't know.
Okay, well that
helps. But I think it might be a vaquero, you know, like the Spanish, the Mexican cowboys in the West. There's sort of a language, the vaqueros that became buckaroos. Same word, really.
Okay.
And there's a lot of Spanish stuff in the cowboy lore.
Well,
the Spanish cattle, you know, it's like there was a lot of Scots cattlemen, and there was a lot of Spanish hands.
Okay. I mean, that makes sense.
Kind of
to
like
me.
In the early West, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know, I'm a nerd for history and stuff.
You know what, Tim? It kind of shows. It kind of. That's why I bring all my questions.
But that
questions
stuff
to
was
you.
All kind of connected, you know. that Donegal. It's like I heard that at the Cowboy Poetry Gathering, as sung by a guy named Buck Ramsey, who was a kind of a working cowboy and had a bad accident as a young man and was paralyzed, and so he pursued the music and the poetry and became quite a mover and shaker in that world before he died. And
okay.
I was going up to this room because at the gathering after hours there was a jam session. They said Jack Elliott's up there, and I always wanted to meet him. And they said you could probably go in there, so I brought my mandolin in there. I sat down, and there was Jack Elliott, and this guy in a wheelchair was Buck Ramsey, and he sang Donegal. I thought it was just gorgeous, and it's like one of those songs where you hear it once, and then you start hearing it. You've probably heard it before, but you start noticing it more, and just other people singing it. And, you know, it's connected with Hal. It's connected by, you know, I'm interested in Jack Elliott. That's how I got to meet Buck Ramsey and sing this song. And I know they're all kind of, it's all sort of connected.
Well, yeah. And I haven't mentioned the first cut on the album, which probably gets through bluegrass lines and radio, probably Digging My Potatoes probably gets, I don't know if you have any idea. The album dropped, what, the end of March?
Yeah.
Okay. So
I think Beyond is getting play.
Is it?
Amazing Love, and then a smattering of other things. I think Digging My Potatoes, though. You know, it's funny about that one.
It kind of jumps out right away as a here's a bluegrass song.
Yeah, I think it's a great bluegrass number. I didn't know we were towards the end of the session day, and I did not. I think we recorded six songs in April and seven songs in October for this, something like that. And in April, it was like I had five songs that I felt like I was pretty sure of, and I had a couple other things, and I almost called, almost said we're done, and I said, well, there's this thing, I don't really know how to sing it. And we just kind of started playing it, and it came together real fast. And I like how fresh it is, and I like how, you know, it's kind of like bluegrass is sort of a like a program. You run a song through it, you can make it bluegrass.
Okay. All right. I know what you're saying.
And it's like, if you listen to Bill Brunsey's version of that, or Washboard Sam's, which is probably the original one from mid-30s.
See, now I have to look, now I have to look all
that
stuff
up. It's a
whole
different feel.
I'm going to look it up when we're done.
Yeah. The various people recorded it different ways, with different melodies and different chord progressions and stuff, and I may have kind of changed it my own self some. I don't know. I wrote it down, and you know, I love the lyric, and I love Bill Brunsey's version of it. Then I just wrote it down in a little. I've got these little yuppie notebooks, these little Moleskine books that have lyrics of songs that I want to learn and that I'm supposed to know already. And it's in there two or three times in different books. I finally got to record it. I had this way of singing it, and I thought that would work.
Like
I say, just flip a switch. You know, plug it in, flip a switch, and let her go, boys.
Let it through the bluegrass spectrometer. See what comes out the other one. We talked a little bit about Drunkard's Waltz, which is where we've noted that. And that's also very, It's a more of a, well, we did just talk about that a little bit. It's a more of a slower tempo a little bit. My line is straight as opposed to straight up. And we talked about that. And I also don't know the author of that, J.D. That name doesn't ring a bell.
J.D. Hutchison is another old friend and hero, and he wrote Hot Rods recorded three of his songs at least. People like Robert Earl Keen and
okay,
some other groups have done his songs, but he's kind of a cultish figure. He's from Belmont County, Ohio, up by he lives in Athens now. But he's from Belmont County. And that's near where I grew up in Wheeling, West Virginia. And so he was kind of half a generation older than me and had been playing bluegrass. And he was the first guy that I met that was, he was like from the tradition. His dad played the old music, fiddle and stuff, and mom and dad sang country music. And he, but he was well-traveled and well-read, still chewed back at it and talked like a hillbilly, but he could quote Shakespeare, but he could also play Bill Monroe. And he sort of showed me that you could write new songs that sort of still fit in the genre and that the tradition keeps moving. And it was just like a brilliant illustration of it. And he keeps doing that. He's not too active. He's, 76 years old, just kind of hanging around in Athens.
We talked a little bit about, because we were talking about Brian Sutton's playing on the album, and we mentioned La Gringa Renee. And I know I talked to you off air about that, but take a little bit of time to explain that one.
Well, it sounds like what it sounds, I guess. It's kind of a slow instrumental on the mandolin and kind of funny chords off, sort of flatted fifths and stuff. And anyway, Jan and I were on vacation down on the beach in Mexico. We were down on the south of Cancun. And, 3 or 4 days into a good week, and everything's just kind of beautiful, and palm trees swaying in the breeze and the water lapping at the beach. And I've got the mandolin, and Jan's reading a book, and I just started playing the thing and sort of making up that first lick and just kind of got fascinated with it and just kept going. So I named it after Jan because her middle name's Renee. So we're gringos down in the Yucatan writing music we think is from there, but it's probably from some other weird planet. I don't know.
Well, I had mentioned to you off of the air, I love the tune. It's a gorgeous, nice melody, and it has a nice opening and a nice closing of some little vocal treatments. But I even told you off the air. I think we did this off the air that, okay, I get the Spanish, I get the Mexican, but sometimes I think it drifts to the other side of the Mediterranean. Maybe picks up some of that.
There's an awful lot of the other side of the Mediterranean in Spain. It's flamenco music is Moroccan music. It's Moorish music.
There you go. All right, that helps.
And so
that
there's helps. Spanish guitar music. It uses that same kind of flamenco music. It kind of has that kind of a chord progression. Some, but it's it's just out of thin air. And but it was cool to record that. Brian, I didn't know if we could pull it off. Brian, I wanted Brian to play because I wanted one more instrument to add to it, and I knew Brian would play a beautiful solo too. But one of the things where the tempo ebbs and flows on purpose,
right,
which is kind of not very bluegrass. But it we recorded it without a lot of times you're in a studio and you go in your little booth and you sort of stay pristinely clean from other people's sounds going into your microphone. But for this, we kind of got real close in the studio so we could sort of see each other and I'll sort of feel the ebbs and flows of the tempo. I was kind of directing with my forehead, bouncing my head back and forth.
Well, definitely changes tempo in the last, I used to write these things down. I can tell you where Hop Down Reel becomes Johnny Dirty's reel. That's like a minute and 15 seconds left, but I can't tell you where the tempo changes in La Gringa Renee because I didn't write it down, but I usually pay attention. But, yeah, it's a great melody. It's always a good time, by the way, to re-sing and re-record a tune by Woody Guthrie. He had Pastures of Plenty.
Oh, yeah. Woody's I got to know Woody's daughter and a little bit son Arlo, his daughter Nora. She's been running Woody Guthrie Publications. She took over for her late mother. they made it a, her mother made it a project of her goal to get Woody's songs out to more people. Pete Seeger, of course, really helped her by singing This Land Is Your Land everywhere in the world for about 50 years.
Right.
But and getting it in textbooks and all that kind of stuff, you know, school songbooks and stuff. But knowing her, started coming around to gigs and stuff, and then I was invited to some celebrations of Woody's life, and on the 100th year of his 100th birthday year, I think it was 2012, I was invited to participate in some shows, and I collaborated with Del McCurry Band, and we did Woody Guthrie songs, but he did Philadelphia Lawyer, I don't know what all he sang, I did various things, and then I felt like this song, Pastures of Plenty, was really a good, would make a really good bluegrass, up-tempo bluegrass thing, and we sang it that way two or three times a year at different events. And then I just came away thinking, well, if I ever get a chance, I'll take a crack at that. And so when I got the band together and realized, oh, I got a good bluegrass band here that maybe we could keep together, we just set up doing that thing. Somebody said, oh, yeah. I said, well, I got one more. Let's do Pastures of Plenty. And they go, oh, that old thing? But then it turned out it was something new. It's a different way of singing, I think, that the chord progression is not like what Woody would have done. And it's a little bit like, the song's kind of like pretty poly in its melodic makeup. Like so many Woody Guthrie songs, that come from earlier melodies.
Right.
And, but that one, you know, his music is so pertinent. It remains so relevant.
It's always timely. It's always timely to have Woody Guthrie.
Yeah.
You mentioned Norman Blake. There's a Last Train from Poor Value. Poor Valley. I can't think of a more comfortable sounding writer and performer than Norman Blake. And I know, you know, he's a great musician, but his songs and the way he sings and his phrases just seem so, my word, I'm not a singer that, you know, or a performer, they seem so comfortable to be inside of.
He's I think it's really important to remember Norman's music because he's not on the scene as much anymore. He's made some brilliant records of original music in recent years, but he doesn't tour. And it's really good to call attention. And again, this is somebody who started out as a hero, and I got to know and stayed in touch with over the years. And now that he's off the road, it's a real rare treat to go visit him at his house and play a little music. It's so much a part of what the way I look at music is through listening to Norman. I mean, I owe a debt to all the musicians I've ever met or listened to, you know. And Doc Watson, of course, is maybe right up the top as somebody who really provided the template and the direction to go for somebody like me. Or John Hartford is another one like, or John Hutchinson is another, J.D. Hutchinson is another one. Like, you could be a multi-instrumentalist, but you can write songs and you can be traditional all at the same time. That's kind of, you need somebody to show you how that works.
I think everybody has memories of Norman Blake. They have to, unless they're just really, really recently to the earth. But everybody had Whiskey Before Breakfast. It was so popular that they put another stamp on it and called it the Guitar Album.
Yeah.
Remember back in those days.
Yeah, Norman's music is really, really just perked right up through the ground there at the time in the early 70s. When Will the Circle Be Unbroken record came out, some of us already were well aware of Norman and Doc Watson and those people, but that cemented it. And then seeing him on the circuit, man, and then getting to hang out backstage and play music. I mean, Norman was like, he really likes old time fiddle tunes, and he just playing them all day long, wherever he is. Doesn't matter where he is, what's going on, who's there. He's got a mandolin or a guitar in his hand, and he's playing those tunes. And
I just think of him as always relaxed, whatever he's doing. For some reason, I can't imagine him being like I am, you know, where's my watch, or being upset. I just think he's like, you know, well, we'll just do a song about it. Go something like this. You know. We've mentioned most of the, and the last tune I didn't want to make light of, Crooked Road, which is, to me, that's Tim O'Brien all over. I mean, it's, you travel, so you write about traveling or being in other places, and Crooked Road, the last of the 13. We haven't hit all of them, but we've talked enough about the album. But I do want to let you talk a little bit about Crooked Road, because it does talk, it's kind of the life of a musician or performer, and
Yeah, it's the life of a musician. I think it's the life. I think it's everybody's life. We walk a path, and it takes you in unexpected directions, and you don't know what comes next, but you keep walking. And I think it's about family, and it's about the people who've come before you, and about passing the baton on to those that are going to go on beyond after you're gone. And it's just about walking this, path of tradition in a way. It's like the everybody adds a little to it, keeps it going, refreshes it, hopefully, so that other people can continue it.
Yeah, it's a great album. I really love it. It's the Tim O'Brien Bluegrass Band, and you're doing this with me. We're doing this on the weekend, folks. When you hear it, it won't necessarily be the weekend, but because you're taking off again. You're back on at least the Crooked Air. You're flying, and you're doing some more touring out of the country.
Yeah, I'm headed to Jen and I are headed to Genoa in Italy to play a week of concerts with Beppe Gambetta, and a couple other Americans are coming over, Jefferson Hamer and Laura Cortese. And Beppe's got the program all kind of lined up with. As a singing songs about our hometowns and beyond and other stuff too, but he's got a overarching theme going on. And then after we do that, we're going to go on vacation in Sicily for a week and see the sights there. But after that, I come home and go on the tour. We're the band is playing festivals all through the summer and working on stuff in the fall as well.
This new album, just the title is the Tim O'Brien Bluegrass Band, and also your tour schedule, I'm sure, is easy enough to find on a website.
Yeah, you can find it. It's actually, the title is actually Tim O'Brien Band, but it doesn't matter. It is a bluegrass band, I think. It's what I think of bluegrass. What I think is bluegrass, anyway.
Well, right. And of course, you're right. It's your album, but why did I write down Bluegrass Band? I don't know. Maybe because I wanted to emphasize many of the tunes have a bluegrass treatment, and maybe just...
Yeah, I'm trying to... I wanted to sort of do a couple things with this record, which is I wanted to be the guitar player in a bluegrass band. That's one thing, which I've never been. I mean, in any kind of concentrated way, I've always been the guy that plays a mandolin. Or I took up the mandolin and the fiddle because there were too many guitar players. So I'm kind of going back to square one.
Okay.
And the other thing is I kind of wanted to go ahead.
No, I didn't know that. I've seen you perform solo, by the way. So I've seen you play everything with a string on. I've seen your banjo and your guitar and all your mandolin things. And
I really love playing that rhythm guitar, and I like getting down on the low strings and playing some kind of bluesy stuff like Charles Fotell or maybe Larry Sparks would play. Hopefully, I can pull it off. And just trying to bring what I think of bluegrass. From my point of view, because there's so many versions of bluegrass, and this is fairly eclectic if you look at it.
Very much.
But if you look at Bill Monroe and where his music comes from, it's also eclectic. He drew from jazz sources and the little ballads and
even some little tunes.
He wrote his own songs.
Some New Orleans stuff snuck in there. I mean,
I know it. Yeah. When Bill Monroe when he took Pete Rowan near there, they would go to New Orleans. To go listen to music. He wanted the bluegrass boys to hear this music.
Yeah.
And it's definitely, bluegrass is, this is so much more water's gone under the bridge since Bill Monroe's time.
And it will continue. It'll continue, but, nothing exists in a vacuum except nothing, really. So it has to be, influences.
But anyway, it's just, and the other thing I wanted to do with this record was to say, I've had a lot of touring in over the last 30 years where I've come with a different band each time you see me. And I'm trying to narrow that down and have the same group and actually play more with the group. And so sort of establishing a name, and I don't need to establish my own name, but I just wanted to say, okay, I'm touring with a band more often, folks. Check it out, what it might sound like.
Okay.
Most of the times I make a record, it's got various people on it and different tracks, and it's never any one band from track to track. This is the opposite side of the coin.
When you released Pompadour, did you do that like one or two songs at a time? Is that something I remember from that specific recording? And this is all dropped.
Well, when
at
we
once?
Did that, yeah, that Pompadour record, I started a thing called Jan and I started a thing called Short Order Sessions.
That's right.
And we put singles out once a month for about 2.5 years.
Right.
And some of those songs came out before the Pompadour record came out, this title track and three or four of the other ones. But, yeah, I had it, I had the idea of just kind of unloading a lot of stuff that was, I had some tracks that were just sort of sitting there, and then I had the idea of doing stuff spur of the moment, which was really fun.
Very fun. There's no,
yeah, some of those.
There's no James Brown on the Tim O'Brien Band album.
No, no, sorry.
It's okay. I didn't want anyone to think that I forgot to mention it, but there isn't any. Well, listen, man, I appreciate your time. I know you're busy as heck, and go on about your day, and we'll look for you down the road somewhere.
Thanks, Steve, and thanks for playing the solid music, man.
Sure, man. Thanks. See you later, Tim.
Bye-bye.